Welcome to North Star Church. At North Star, our desire is to lead people to follow Jesus Christ and not simply go to church, but to be the church. The following message was recorded and produced at our Blacksburg, Virginia campus. You can find more information about North Star, including recent podcasts, news, upcoming events, and so much more at northstarfamily.org. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's message.
As you probably could tell from my prayer, we are continuing our study on giving. And so as we started that last week, you guys know that Matt was showing us that God's design for his people throughout history is that we would give our first and our best to him, knowing that he has given his first and best to us by sending Jesus to die on the cross for us and to die for our sins, allowing us to know him and to follow him. So last week, we see that we were called to be generous people because God has been such a generous God to us. Matt reminded us that everything we have comes from God and is actually his. We're called to join him in doing what he's, in stewarding what he's given us to watch over, whether that's our time, our talent, and our treasures. And if you didn't catch that message, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it because it's one of the better messages I've ever heard on giving. And it's probably going to be better than whatever I say today, just because of how Matt is. I mean, come and look at the guy, right? But this morning, we want to jump to the New Testament to get a picture of what giving looks like for us in the New Testament. We focused a lot on some Old Testament passages last week that demonstrated that God's people have always been called to be generous because God has always been a generous God. But in light of what Jesus has done, we see some different nuances with the New Testament. So go ahead and turn in your Bibles over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 is where we're going to be. Now, Paul is writing to the church in the city called Corinth. If you've been with us for the last year and a half or so, you probably are familiar with Corinth because we spent a lot of time last year talking about Paul's first letter to the church at Corinth. Some things have happened since the last time that he wrote to them and since where he left off. But what Paul's been doing during this intervening time is he's been going around to the churches he's worked with and the churches he's started, and he's taking up a collection that's an offering to go help the saints who are in Jerusalem who have been persecuted. So the church in Jerusalem, that's where it all got started. And since they got started, things have really heated up for them. So they've been pushed to the outskirts of society. They're impoverished. And so Paul's going around to all the churches and he's taking up an offering to be able to give to support those churches in Jerusalem. It's been going on for a while, and at some point the Corinthians had told Paul that they were interested in participating. They were going to take part in this offering, so now as he sends this letter, he's asking them to make good on their word. So to encourage their obedience, what Paul's going to do is give us this incredible picture from the churches in Macedonia. Now, I know that immediately all of you guys are Bible scholars, and so you're like, oh, of course the churches in Macedonia. Well, those are... Nobody knows. It's okay. I had to look it up too. I went to seminary. I still don't know these things. I had to look it up. The churches in Macedonia, for those who are interested, are the churches in Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. That's specifically the churches that he's talking about. Here's what's interesting. The Macedonian churches were really doing great spiritually. They were growing. They were following Jesus. They were doing fantastic. But they had been persecuted just like the church in Jerusalem. As we will see through the text, they were impoverished just like the Christians in Jerusalem were. And yet, in the midst of their difficulty, they were unbelievably generous. So what Paul's doing here is not trying to pit two churches against each other. Instead, he's giving the Corinthians and he's giving us an incredible opportunity to see what generous giving really looks like. They demonstrate some incredible attitudes of how generous people respond in light of the generous God we serve. So as we look at these five verses, we're going to see at least four different ways that we can draw out of this to describe what our giving should look like because of what Jesus has done for us. So read the passage with me, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, starting in verse 1. We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that was given to the churches of Macedonia. Now, interestingly, let's pause before we go any further. Notice that what Paul is getting ready to describe is a way that the grace of God worked in the churches of Macedonia. When we think about giving, so many of us think of it as a chore, as a thing we just kind of have to do. But what Paul says here is the Macedonians' response was evidence of the grace of God working in them to give. So here you go. Pick up in verse 2. During a severe trial brought about by affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. Man, that's a beautiful sentence. I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability, of their own accord, they begged us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in the ministry of the saints. Now, not just as we had hoped. Instead, they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us by God's will. So as we look at this, guys, look at the language. I just love this passage because Paul seems to almost be tripping over words to describe how generous the church in Macedonia was. Now, before we dive into their generosity, let's talk a little bit about a couple of terms that you've heard us talk about in the series and how this all fits together. Last week, Matt mentioned the idea of tithing, right? The biblical concept of us giving our first and best 10% back to the Lord. Now, everything that God gives us is His. We're simply stewards of all of the resources we have, whether that's our finances, whether that's our cars, our houses, our clothes. Everything we have ultimately belongs to God, but He calls us to give back our first 10% in what was called a tithe. This is something that God gave to the nation of Israel back in the Old Testament. When you actually put it together, they had three separate tithes they were supposed to bring. One was every 3 years. So it effectively worked out to where God called them to give away 23% of their income every year. Now, that's a pretty high standard for us to think about. In the New Testament, there is no direct command for Christians to tithe. All right, some of you stopped listening there. But here's what we see. At no point does the New Testament say specifically that you are called and commanded to tithe. But that doesn't mean that we're not supposed to. Let me see where you get that, all right? Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, and he's correcting them on some of their errors. In Matthew chapter 23, he says this: "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You pay a tenth of mint, dill, and cumin, and yet you've neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These things should have been done without neglecting the others." Okay? So the Pharisees, the religious leaders, were all about doing external things that made them look super spiritual. And so they actually would tithe their herbs, okay? Some of you guys grow your own, like basil and stuff like that. So think about, like, every 10 leaves that you pull off of your little basil plant, you give one of those to the church. That's how fastidious these guys were with tithing. The only problem was they also were jerks. And so instead of actually loving Jesus and caring about things like justice and mercy and things like that, they cared about making sure that they gave a tenth of their mint or their dill or their cumin, but they didn't care about what happened to other people. When Jesus corrects them, he says, "These things you should have done without neglecting the others," right? So at no point does Jesus say, "Hey, look, you don't have to worry about tithing." In fact, actually, here's what we find even more incredibly. The standard in the New Testament is not the tithe. If you want to go up with the pattern that we see in the book of Acts, it's to give everything. That's actually what the standard for believers is. The generosity that we're called to say is not limited to 10% or 23%. It's actually limited to everything that God's entrusted to us. Where do we see that? Book of Acts chapter 4, verse 34 and 35. Here's what it says: "For there was not a needy person among them, because all those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the proceeds of what was sold, and laid them at the apostles' feet. This was then distributed to each person as any had need." Whoa. People were selling their houses to give to make sure that everybody's needs were met. Now, we could go into a long discussion about why this is not communism, but that's for a different topic for a different day. They were voluntarily giving of what God had given them, and there was no limit to what was off limits. Can you imagine going home today and having the conversation with your spouse? Maybe God's calling you to do it. I don't know. It says, "You know what? I feel like God has called us to sell our house to be able to support missionaries on the field. I feel like the Agape Center over in Christiansburg is doing such a great work. I feel like God's called us to get rid of that extra car and give the proceeds to them. I feel like we know that North Star's got this mortgage that they're trying to pay down through the IM7 thing. I feel like, what if God's calling us to sell our boat to be able to give?" You see, the standard for us is to be as generous as God has been to us. We see that actually here in 2 Corinthians. If you jump down to verse 9, this is going to be kind of a theme verse. We're going to bounce back and forth around all day today. "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich." See, that's the standard. The standard is that there's a God in heaven to whom all of creation owes its very existence. The one who sustains everything, the one who created everything, the one who orders everything and who's in charge of everything. And yet that very same God came and took on human flesh and walked around and got splinters and cut and all those kind of things that happen when you're a normal human being. He taught. He did miracles. He was misunderstood. He was maligned. And eventually he was hung on a cross and died to pay the penalty for my sin and yours. He was buried, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. And now generously he gives himself to us so that we can find life and hope and joy and change everything about our current existence and life forever for us. That's the standard that we're held to as New Testament givers, is to be generous as God has been generous to us. Now, let's try to put some framework around that. What does that actually look like for how we should approach our giving? What should characterize it then? Well, see, here's one kind of broad phrase to think about in terms of today's message. My generosity reflects my joy in God's generosity to me. Now, it's an awkward phrase. I couldn't think of a better way to put it, so you may have to write it down and chew on it for a minute. My generosity reflects my joy in God's generosity to me. In other words, I'm only going to be as generous as I have joy in God's generosity that he showed to me. Let's see how that played out in the life of the Macedonians and should play out in our giving as well. Some of the things we're going to talk about are going to sound kind of redundant because it's like, well, you already said that. Yes, but I don't know about you, but I need to hear things multiple times before I actually get it. So let's dive in. The first thing that should describe our giving is that it should be, number one, joyful. It should be joyful. Look back at verse 2. During a severe trial brought about by affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. I love what looks like the paradox of this verse. Right? The Macedonian believers were in a tough spot, and that's way underselling it. You see, as they became Christians, they were starting to get pushed to the outsides of society. Their businesses were being captured. They were being persecuted. They had nothing. And yet, in this severe trial that was brought on by the afflictions of being persecuted, they had an abundant joy. Hey guys, I'm going to be real honest with you. I wasn't planning on sharing this story with you, but I just got to give you an example out of my life. This week, we had a scare with my wife's car. The transmission started going, right? In case you're not a car guy, car transmissions are not supposed to do that. We took it to the mechanic, and I got a phone call from the mechanic, and he said, hey, Mr. Couch, just wanted to let you know that you're going to need a new transmission, $4,400. Now, I don't know about you, but most of us are not looking to drop $4,400 in a week that we're not expecting to. So I would love to say that I responded to these afflictions with an abundance of joy. But I sure didn't. I started freaking out. God, how are we going to do this? We're not ready to buy a new car. I don't have time to go look for a new car. I don't have time to deal with this. What? How are we going to? It's summer. My wife's got to go places. I got to go. How are we going to? So he said, by the way, if you're going to just junk it, if you don't, we, as a last-ditch effort, we'll try changing out the transmission fluid. Worst case scenario, you're at $125. It worked. Now, yeah, to God be the glory. But I would love to tell you that that was like some abundant faith. No, God was working in spite of me freaking out for 2 days straight about how I was going to fix this. The Macedonians have their businesses stolen. Their houses are being taken from them. Nobody likes them. And they have this abundance of joy that overflows in this wealth of generosity. Puts me to shame. You see, when life's good, I have a tendency to have joy. But when it gets a little scary, it gets a little hard. Paul Tripp says, you're like half of us are one flat tire away from being an atheist, right? God, I thought you loved me. I'm going to be late for my tea time. Guys, we laugh, but we do it. But the Macedonians didn't. Out of an abundance of joy, they recognized that God had generously given his own son on their behalf, so the rest of it didn't matter. All of this, it's his. It doesn't matter. He's going to take care of it. And if he doesn't, great. What's the worst that can happen? I die and I go to heaven with him forever? Out of an abundance of joy they gave. Here's how one commentator put it. Poverty overflowing into wealth also may seem paradoxical, but it fits the crazy quilt logic of the gospel. Joy plus severe affliction plus poverty equals wealth. Here, wealth relates to a wealth of generosity and joy multiplied. They didn't need things to make them joyful because Jesus had already given them a deep, rich joy that nothing could take away. Guys, we should be happy people. But we know that joy is deeper than happiness, but instead, the joy that motivates us to give out of our poverty is the certainty that our wealth isn't in our money, but in the reality that God has given me everything that I need for life and godliness. He's got an inheritance that's kept in heaven for me, and he's preserving me to get to that point. Read 1 Peter chapter 1 if you need to get a refresher on that. Guys, we have this hope and this joy, and that ought to overflow in a joyful generosity. We should look forward to times to be able to give because God has been so generous to us. It seems like Paul and his companions didn't really feel comfortable asking for the Macedonians, but look again at verse 3. I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability of their own accord, they begged us earnestly for the privilege of sharing the ministry of the saints. Guys, you get this picture that Paul was like, yeah, we're taking up a collection for the saints in Jerusalem, but it's okay, we understand. And they begged him earnestly to be able to participate in what God was doing. Would to God that we would have that level of joy. Whether that's giving our time, our talents, our treasures, would to God that we would be so captivated by Jesus that when we have an opportunity to give, our first reaction is like our kids who don't know better. You know what I'm talking about? Like you tell a kid that they need something, they grab their piggy bank and they start handing you money because they don't care. All their needs are taken care of, and so their money out of their piggy bank, they don't know. Would to God that we would act that way. You see, because not only should our giving be joyful, it should also, number two, be generous. Now, again, like I said, you keep using that word. It does mean what I think it means, okay? Yeah, thank you for the millennials in the room who actually caught the Princess Bride reference. I know we keep using it, but it is crystal clear in this text. Look again, verse 2. During a severe trial brought about by affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty overflowed in a wealth of generosity. See, when these folks gave, it wasn't that they just scrounged together what they could find between the couch cushions, unless that was the only place they could find the money. Isn't that an awesome phrase? In a wealth of generosity. The picture I get from this is that their giving was so overwhelming in light of their circumstances that it was almost ridiculous. It seems like Paul was hesitant to ask them, but they gave. Again, verse 5 said they gave not only, verse 4, they begged us earnestly for the sharing of the ministry, not just as we'd hoped. Verse 3 said that they gave according to their ability and even beyond their ability. Their generosity was above and beyond what they could have asked for. Maybe they were able to empathize with the church in Jerusalem because they were kind of going through the same thing. But regardless, their generosity showed that they believed that God would take care of them when they needed it. Their generosity was this incredible demonstration of faith that says, you know what? I know things are crazy right now, but I know I have this opportunity to be a part of what God's doing, and I can't wait. Here's how Life Action Ministries talks about this. They say this, I need to learn to give today out of my abundance or supply to meet the needs of others, believing that tomorrow, if I have a need, God will use the abundance of others to meet my need. Now, leave that up there for a second. I need to learn to give today out of my abundance or my supply even to meet the needs of others, believing that if God's calling me to do that, if I have a need, God will use the abundance of others to meet my need. Now, that is some faith-based living. Knowing that if I give today, that God's going to take care of it. That's what he says there in verse 13 through 15. Jump down a little bit. He said, it's not that there should be relief for others and hardship for you, but it's a question of equality. At the present time, your surplus is available for their need, so their abundance may in turn meet your need in order that there may be equality, just as it's written, the person who had much did not have too much, and the person who had little did not have too little. You see, if God's calling us to give, he knows exactly how he's going to meet the needs that he's calling us to give, right? He knows exactly what's coming tomorrow. You know what I really have no clue about? I have no clue what our taxes are going to look like this year. I have no idea what my retirement portfolio is going to look like at the end of the year. Not a clue. I have no idea how things are going to go financially. The world right now is a giant question mark because of all the changes, all the upset, all of the things. But you know who knows? The God who gave himself to me. The God who calls me to be generous, trusting that he'll meet my needs because he's already met my greatest ones. So when I give, I can say, you know what? I know it's a weird time right now, and I don't know what's going to happen with Doge, and I don't know what's going to happen, what Trump's going to do. I don't know what the tariffs are going to, I don't know how much my iPhone's going to cost. I don't know. But I know that God's calling me to be generous, to give. And I know that means he's going to take care of it. By the way, let's be real clear here. We're not talking about that prosperity gospel thing. If you give $100, God's going to give you $1,000 and all that. That's not what he's saying. But he's saying you can trust that if God calls you to give and you respond generously, he'll meet your needs. We've seen that over and over and over and over and over again. Times where God calls us to step out and give, and then he meets a need in an unexpected way. Now, we still have to worry about a $4,400 transmission. But God has been faithful every single day. Guys, our giving should be joyful and it should be generous. Because God has been generous to us and he's going to take care of it. Remember, though, what's interesting about this, as you're thinking about it, you may sit around and look and say, I can just tell by looking, I can't give as much as some of the people in this room. Right? My shirt's from Walmart, his shirt's not, right? See, here's the beautiful truth about giving that we see from this passage. Not only is our giving joyful and generous, it's also proportional. Our giving should be proportional. Look at verse 3. I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability that they gave. You see, the reality is the dollar amount is somewhat inconsequential to the Lord. Let me ask you a straightforward question this morning. So when we take up the offering here in a few minutes, after we get done with the message this morning, we pass the buckets around. If somebody puts $100 in the basket and somebody puts $1,000 in the basket, who gave more? Now, if you're an accountant, you say obviously $1,000. We know financially, fiscally, balancing out a ledger, $1,000 is a bigger number than $100. But that's not how God's economy works. I can promise you the church at Corinth, we talked about it, it was an affluent church, and I can guarantee you that they could give 10 times what these impoverished churches in Macedonia could give. But it's the heart that matters. In Matt's message last week, he reminded us that God owns everything. He referenced Psalm 50:10, where God reminds us that every animal in the world belongs to him, so he doesn't need our offerings. Matt reminded us that regardless of how much time, talent, or treasure God's given us to steward, we all have a first and best that we can give. And that's what makes God's math different than ours. Yes, financially speaking, the church's bank account increases more with a $1,000 gift than $100, but it very well may be that the $100 was a much greater sacrifice than the $1,000. So it was the greater gift. The smaller gift may have demonstrated greater faith and generosity than the larger gift. Jesus highlighted that exact scenario with his disciples one day. Mark chapter 12. Sitting across from the temple treasury, he watched how the crowd dropped money into the treasury. Many rich people were putting in large sums. Then a poor widow came and dropped in 2 tiny coins worth very little. Summoning his disciples, he said to them, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others, for they all gave out of their surplus. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." You see, in God's eyes, the greatest gift is the one that most clearly demonstrates a generous heart that is surrendered to him. The widow gave 100% of what she needed to live off of. And even though it was less economic value than what others gave, it was a genuine expression of her generosity, of her love, and her trust in the Lord. Your gift matters, not because of the dollar amount, but because you gave it out of a heart of obedience to God's leading, honoring him with a gift that matched your ability. Paul addresses this again later in the chapter. Look down at verse 12. "For if the eagerness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what a person doesn't have." You see, the gift is based off what you have, not what you don't. So by being faithful to give what you can right now, even if you don't feel like it's very much, by doing so, you're experiencing the blessing and the joy of partnering with God and meeting needs and taking care of what he's doing around the world. You're honoring him by an act of faith and trust that maybe somebody with more resources may never experience. God's economy is so much different than ours. When a gift of pennies is much more than a gift of thousands, you know that something has to be different than normal. And that speaks all to the final aspect of giving that we want to look at this morning, which is our giving should be ordered. Our giving should be ordered. Now, when I say ordered, I'm not meaning commanded, although God does command us to give. We've seen that. That's not what we're focusing on here. Instead of, I'm using ordered in the sense of in the right priority or in the right order. See, notice that the Macedonians followed that in verse 5. They gave not just as we had hoped. Instead, they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us by God's will. You see, they gave themselves first to the Lord. Here again is one of the main principles we talked about last week, that God wants your heart before he wants a single penny or your time or your talents, your treasures, whatever it is. But the way that you give is a window into your heart. See, at one point in the Old Testament, God's people had gotten away from him. They were going to be judged for it. So God called them to them through the prophet Joel and said this, "Even now," this is the Lord's declaration, "turn to me with all your heart, with fasting, weeping, and mourning. Tear your hearts, not just your clothes, and return to the Lord your God. For he's gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in faithful love, and he relents from sending disaster." You see, he said, guys, you do all these external things, the tearing of your clothes that shows mourning, giving offerings, all of these kind of things. But I want your heart first. That's where the Macedonians started. They gave themselves to the Lord first, and then out of that, they gave to what he was calling them to do. God wants you before he wants anything else. He wants you to turn from trying to make your life work on your own to letting him lead, guide, and provide for you. Have you ever done that? I mean, has there been that time in your life when you've turned from trying to live life your way to turn to Christ? That's the first thing that you give this morning, yourself. Why? Bringing it full circle, because for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, though he was rich, for your sake he became poor. Right? He's brought this all the way around. See, Jesus loved you so much that he would die on the cross and rise from the dead to pay our debt and to give us his life. And so now he invites you to come to him, to surrender to him. And out of joy, we do that in response. And in light of such an incredible God who loves us so dearly, who's done so much for us, we give. We give ourselves first. Have you surrendered to him? If not, that's where you start. Because as you give yourself to him and say, God, I don't know what this looks like. I don't know what this means, but I want to turn to follow you and I'm all in. Everything I am, everything I have, it's yours. And I acknowledge that. It already is, but now I'm trusting you with it. And then as you turn to him that way, what begins to happen is you get to understand that generosity that Jesus has shown you deeper and deeper. And he stirs up this affection for Christ in you that overflows in a wealth of generosity, whether it's generosity with your time and sitting and talking to people you'd rather not, whether it's a generosity of time that results in you coming down here every night for in a couple of weeks for vacation Bible school and helping kids know Jesus, a generosity of your talents, of you using your gifts that God's given you for his kingdom, taking a week of vacation and going around the world to be able to bless the church there and see the kingdom expanded in some way, or take the resources he's entrusted to you to give to the local church for the work of the ministry to continue, to give beyond that to what God's doing, then in all of these things that Jesus would be exalted. If you know that Jesus has saved you, though, then the question is, are you being generous with your time, your talents, and treasures in the same way that God's been generous with you? If not for you, why not ask God to remind you of what he has done? To refresh your heart with the beauty of God's generosity on your behalf. Now, in just a minute, we're going to have an opportunity to actually put some action to this, to allow you to respond in obedience if God's been moving, because we're going to take up an offering. We're going to be singing, and giving an opportunity to express back to God with the songs that we sing, that our generosity to what he's done in our hearts. But it may be for you, this is the first step where you say, you know what, God? I've not been trusting you with the area of my finances. And I want to take that first step today by giving. We're going to pass those around. Our ushers will be coming forward to receive our regular tithes and our offerings. You can also give in the Church Center app, or you can give using the online link that you'll see. I'm going to invite the worship team to go ahead and come on up as we prepare for our time of response. But as you give, here's my fear. I don't want this to be an emotionally manipulative message where I've just yelled at you and my voice is cracking because we slept with the window open last night and so my throat's all shot. And you say, boy, that guy got excited. I feel like I just need to give. Now, like the Macedonians, we need to make sure that we've given our heart first. So you know what, God? Everything that I am, everything that I have, it's all yours. It always has been. And I'm surrendering to that. So then as I give, whether I give online, give in the plate, respond in obedience, I'm doing this joyfully, knowing that you're going to take care of all of my needs. I'm doing this generously because you've been generous to me, and I know that I'll be a recipient of your goodness and grace when you allow. I know that I may not be able to give as much as somebody else, but I'm going to give according to my ability. And as I do this, it's because I've given myself to you first.
We're so glad you found this message today. You can find more resources, including previous podcasts, at northstarfamily.org. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you next time at North Star Church.